This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It is 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. A very, very good morning. This morning's Israel Report brought to you by Lieutenant Colonel Morris Hirsch. He's from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs. He's a former director of the military prosecutions for Judea and Samaria. A very, very good morning to you. Hope you are well. Hope you're dry. Let's start exactly there with Byron. I wasn't taking Byron seriously because I didn't think that anything with the name Byron could do any harm. But it turns out that it was quite the storm.
So yes, indeed. Good morning, Howard. Good morning to all the listeners. It was indeed quite a tremendous storm for us. Much flooding along our coastal plain, entire areas that were just like underwater, sometimes up to a foot and a half of water. Supermarkets are being shown completely flooded, and obviously even one fatality in Jerusalem. Someone appears to have died of hypothermia. Not only wet rain, but also unusual cold. There was all contributing to this whole really picture that was taking place.
What was the? How did the emergency responding service manage? What was their biggest challenge? Did they manage to meet the needs of whatever was required?
So, Howard, every year it appears that we have one of these really quite tremendous storms, and every year we hear the same excuses that, well, the sewage systems just cannot be built in order to deal with such extreme conditions, and really, so we just have flooding all over the place. The security forces are dealing with really a spectrum of different subjects, from flooding, from underground parking areas that have been flooded, people being trapped, people not knowing how to deal with the weather and driving into the floods, and then their cars being even sometimes washed away. So it is quite a challenge just on the roads for the drivers, and then it's also trying to persuade the flash flood mobs, as we call them, going out into the desert and watching these floods develop. Unfortunately, they just develop very, very quickly, and sometimes can be very, very dangerous. And it's an incredible sight to see when the desert, the sand comes to life, and suddenly there's these huge waterfalls. But at the same time, making sure that no one gets washed away in them is quite a challenge. So I think that's really the division. We had not a small amount of people taken to hospital, evacuated hospitals. So really on every front, the security forces were doing their job.
In terms of the military and security operations, this has obviously impacted the whole country, including Gaza. How did they manage this?
Well, so Gaza is just one big mud pit at the moment. There's a lot of flooding there. Obviously, Hamas had really used and abused the entire sewage system in Gaza, not only for their tunnels, but for everything. There was a very famous video a few years ago of UNICEF, the UN Children's Organization, coming along and laying sewage pipes. Like, one asked themselves why it was UNICEF, but that was the video. And then the next day, the Hamas terrorists in the same spot, digging up those same pipes, and then a promotional video of them using them to make rockets to shoot at Israel. So really that was a challenge, and obviously it's very difficult to operate in a situation where everything is flooded, just maintaining the status quo is somewhat of a challenge. And so that was on the Gaza front. Obviously there was some speculation that Hezbollah in the north would be using the storm in order to to take out, to carry out some type of terrorist operation. Thankfully, that doesn't seem to have materialized so far. And so just dealing with that, obviously, flying in these conditions is very, very, very challenging. Mm. And being up on the Hermon, where we also had really quite a substantial amount of snow for the this year, and so that was also a challenge for our soldiers. So really, on all fronts, this was quite a challenging, I think, 48 hours preparing, and then going through it. Even in Judea and Samaria, there was substantial flooding in different areas. So really, everywhere the soldiers were outside. In this weather, trying to stay warm, trying to stay safe.
Yeah, it's certainly it put everything to the test, and not easy for anybody. Let's move on to. I'm very confused by this next story because I found myself applauding it, but thinking, no, why am I applauding this when it took over 2 years? What am I talking about? I'm talking about the Amnesty.
Amnesty International.
Yeah, that they have now come out, released a new report acknowledging the atrocities committed by Hamas, including torture, hostage abuse, violations of international law. Firstly, why? Well, and then we look at Israel's response. But what would have made them do this now?
Well, so Amnesty International is an organization that fundamentally despises Israel. It's an organization that is fundamentally anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish. It's an organization that is willing to distort every factual reality, legal reality, in order to castigate Israel. And then once in a while, they need to provide themselves with this fig leaf of ostensible impartiality. And so once in a while, they write a report against the genocidal terrorists and say, well, look, it's almost like I don't know how many of if you've heard the story of the pig that shoves its paws forward and says, look, because I have cloven hooves, so I'm kosher. It's exactly that. That's what Amnesty International does every once in a while. They provide themselves with this report, which is always, by the way, when you read the report and you look at the report, it's only a fraction, really, of the atrocities that that were committed. And so they do that in order to try and build their own credibility. They don't care in any way whatsoever about the Jewish lives that were taken, the murders, the raping, the torture, and so this is just really, it should be shrugged off for the farce that it is, and really not in any way, shape, or form be taken seriously.
Do you think there was some form of pressure on them to write this report?
No, I don't think that Amnesty feels any pressure. They have managed to shrug off all the criticism about their reports of Israel. I don't think they really care whether they're criticized for not condemning Hamas. So really, they're doing this for all of the worst reasons rather than any type of pressure to show commitment to human rights and in really at all.
Oh, we seem to be having some issues with the line. Morris, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Oh, there
can
we
you
go.
Hear me?
Yes, no, we can. I see that, and maybe I didn't see the whole report, but did they acknowledge the sexual assault? Because from the headlines and from the parts of it that I read, I wasn't sure that it was there.
I also haven't gone through the entirety of the report, but I do not believe that they addressed the sexual assault. They accepted that the sexual assault was an integral part of the genocidal plan. They similarly shy away from those very, very clear findings that have been presented, for example, by the DINA project. And really, those are the type of things that they play down by really pushing the other ideas of what they saw as war crimes and the treatment of the hostages, but it's always covered with that reservation of, well, this is a context in which it has to be read. These are the problems with the amnesty reports.
Yeah, it's the double standards. Do you think it has an impact on international opinion of, for future investigations? You know, just even looking at the ICC case or the ICJ case, where Hamas is barely mentioned, surely this amnesty report will serve some need there in terms of painting the bigger picture.
So we would like to believe possibly that these types of reports actually have some type of value. Unfortunately, they have no value whatsoever. In the ICC, one of the very frequent and unfortunate, obviously, mistakes that the previous prosecutor Fatou Bensouda made was to actually rely on these reports as some type of having some type of criminal use and value. They have no report. They have no value whatsoever. They're all secondhand hearsay evidence, and so it's completely irrelevant for the ICC. When it comes to the ICJ, unfortunately, the ICJ is, and I've said it before, it's a monkey court. You're not looking for justice there. You're never going to find justice there. And so even if there are reports that say that Hamas actually carried out the war crimes and Hamas is the genocidal actor, you'll never find anyone that says, well, you know what? Hamas was responsible for everything that was done. Hamas started this war, and therefore Israel was justified in targeting Hamas and all of its terror infrastructure. They just don't care. Their goal is to castigate Israel. The goal is to delegitimize Israel, and everything else is irrelevant. And just look at the ICC, just to go back to them for a second. In order to prosecute and investigate Israel, they had to invent a country that doesn't exist, Palestine. There is no such country. And then act ultra virus over and above its jurisdiction and say, well, we are the body that's going to set for the first time in history the borders of this non-existent country. How can you ever expect for there to be genuine justice in a court that acts so blatantly against the law and against reality?
It's just remarkable. Let's talk about U.S.-Israel relations and the way forward, the next Gaza phase. There's no doubt about the strength of the U.S.-Israel relationship, but at the same time, the United States has other factors that it uses and that's important for them as they try and reshape the Middle East. The announcement that the new phase will be announced in the new year. What does all of this mean? What is really going on with regard to the next stage of this Gaza deal?
Well, so what appears to be happening is that President Trump is trying to push forward and create the reality of progress, even as that progress is somewhat lacking. For the first step of the deal, it was meant to be the release of all of the hostages. We still don't have Ran Gvili. He has not been returned. He's still being held by Hamas. Hamas is meant to disarm and disband. That also isn't happening. Now what appears to be the developing situation is possibly detrimental, I fear, for the entire peace plan. President Trump seems to have accepted the Arab country reservations from regarding Tony Blair running this board of peace or being an instrumental actor in the board of peace, and is now looking for other actors that could possibly be acceptable to these Arab countries. We're talking about even potentially including Tayyip Erdogan, the Turkish Muslim Brotherhood terror supporting leader, being part of this this project. That's something which would be a fundamental mistake, because it would undermine anything that's actually been achieved until now. Erdogan is part of the problem and no part of the solution. So we seem to be moving not in a positive necessary trajectory, but the goal is for President Trump to say, look, we're moving forward, and to show the progress, and really to create the progress even in its own absence. That's something which I think is potentially very dangerous.
That is unfortunately where we do need to leave it. Thank you as always. That was Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch from the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs, former director of the military prosecution for Judea and Samaria.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.